Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at thomisticinstitute.org.
I want to talk about, for a little bit, about the vice supposed truthfulness, again, as a way of doubling back, and then we'll have some discussion. To do this, we have to talk about a number of things. The first, and the one that I think I'll spend the least time on, the plain sense in which intentional deception, lies through verbal speech, are directly contrary to the virtue truthfulness. There are other kinds of deception that manifest falsehood, not through speech, but through conduct. These are dissimulation, hypocrisy. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we have boasting, and what Thomas calls irony, kind of, which is, doesn't exceed the truth, but falls short of it in significant ways. You know, lies are familiar things. It helps to know a little bit about the various kinds of lies that we can tell or be told. And Thomas knows of a number of ways of distinguishing lies. He has three ways of categorizing them, so their distinctions are real plain. I'm going to focus now on the kind of distinction Thomas draws up. It pertains to specifically the end pursued in deceptive speech. So there's a kind of lie that is distinct from other kinds of lies insofar as it is aimed specifically at some kind of injury or harm. So here we have, there was a question about this in the first talk, lies which are told that in some sense directly contrary to God, they are injurious to their friendship is dropped, cherry, as Thomas understands it, and as I'll explain. So we tell lies like this whenever we deliberately conceal or mute the truth about God and things in relationship to God insofar as they are part of our faith. There are also lies that are distinct from lies that are directly contrary to God as far as they're directly contrary to other human beings, sort of the well-being or flourishing of other human beings. And among these, there are first lies that we tell solely in order to harm other people. More commonly, I think, are the lies that we tell not solely in order to harm other people, but lies that we tell in order to harm other people for the sake of some advantage, some benefit, some utility that comes to us or to those we're connected with in some way. There is, in addition to this, the kind of lie that is aimed at pleasure and is very often rooted in some kind of habitual tendency toward deception. I don't know if you ever had a season of just sort of inveterate lying as a child. I think I did, you know, where you figure out come to realize I had pulled one over on my mom, my dad, my brothers, strangers I meet at camp or at a Thomistic Institute event. And it's just, there's a thrill to it. Little lies. But there's a kind of power that accrues to us through the twisting of reality. And these kinds of lies are aimed not at directly harming others, but just at a certain seemingly kind of innocent pleasure. There are also lies that are aimed at play or just a kind of facetious sociality. We are not especially concerned with harming someone or with any kind of spinning some kind of self-aggrandizing narrative, but like in the case of these, in the habitual liar of life for the sake of pleasure, there's the kind of lying that has to do with bringing pleasure to others. And then there are a whole set of lies, 3GZAPT, that are aimed at specifically, not at harming someone, but at some kind of utility. And they pertain to either protection, preservation, or you might say the security of various things. So the kinds of lies that we tell in order to protect our exterior goods. So I mentioned these earlier. Exterior goods include things like money. Then there are the things that we need for human life that we can, that we typically have to purchase with money. Things like shelter, clothing, transportation, food. We lie to protect these things or to secure them. Then there are the kinds of lies that you tell in, for the preservation of one's own, of your own physical health. Okay, there were a number of moments I expect in the life of both St. Thomas More and St. John Fisher, in which it would have been expeditious, seemingly, to lie. Liars, one might think, maybe it's the case, have a better chance of avoiding the guillotine under certain tyrannical conditions than those committed to telling the truth. And then finally, there are lies that are aimed at avoiding certain kinds of illicit corruption. So this is not these are not lies that we tell in order to protect ourselves from being maimed, killed, but say in order from being disgraced. This is a hard teaching, I think, because in Thomas's view, what all these lies have in common is that they are in fact lies. They are out of sync with the truth. They involve the deliberate concealment or the corruption of reality such as it is, as we know it. And what will make any one of these kinds of lying or deception especially grievous will be the degree to which the lie is contrary to charity. Charity, as I'm speaking of it now, consists in a kind of friendship with God. Any kind of friendship obtains when you have two or more persons who will each other some good and are concretely engaged in the mutual pursuit of that good in some linked context. All of your friendships, insofar as they're true friendships, will involve loving someone who loves you in return, which is to say, willing some good to someone, very often more, not just one good, but many goods. Willing some good to someone who wills that same good, in other cases, to you in return, and who is committed and actually involved in not just willing you those goods, but working those goods, bringing them about in your life. And more specifically, and more essentially, it's committed to the mutual pursuit of those goods with you together. Now, in the case of best kinds of friendship, true friendship, the good that we will our friend is the friendship itself. It's precisely this conjunction of goods, this reality, this union, this togetherness, this mutuality, concourse of love that we want for our friends. Now, someone mentioned Kierkegaard's works of love earlier, and I'll just note as an aside, contra Kierkegaard, contra Kant, and many others who have peculiar modern anxieties about the truth of our friendships. You know, you might ask, for example, how is it that I know that I'm loving my friend for their own sake and not just my own good? Thomas will say, notice, friendship is not the kind of thing you can want only for yourself. Insofar as friendship consists in the mutual well-wishing two persons or more, two or more persons in the concrete context of life, it's simply not something that you can want only for you, right? To love you, to will you this good, this friendship, I have to will it for myself, precisely in virtue of the kind of thing it is. All this is worth saying because according to Thomas, and I think that it's right to say here Thomas has elaborated something that's not, isn't simply particular to a kind of a narrow domain of particular theologians and the persons gathered around his persons. But here I think Thomas has said something about as true as one can say about the gospel itself. The point of talking about friendship is that according to Thomas and according to Christ himself, right, we are not merely servants, but we are friends of God. Christ says in John 15, I no longer call you servants, but I call you friends. Now, in order for that to be true, in order for that to be good news, you have to know something about what friendship is. And here, Thomas's genius, I think, has borne real fruit in the life of the church. What we say is that when Christ calls us friends, what he's saying is that he has made us who are enemies of God into lovers of God and has established us in a real friendship with him. And by in doing so, he's established us in a real friendship, not only with God, but with others in light of God. And this is because when you come to love someone for their own sake, notice that you spontaneously, without deliberation, are moved powerfully to love those who your friends love. Most of you are not old enough to have children yet. Or, well, look, you're all old enough to have children. You were too young. None of you, I expect, have children just yet. But you'll notice that your friends, some of them, will begin having children, and these little people will command your love. And it won't be because there's anything special about them. It won't be because they're particularly talented or it won't be because they're well-behaved. It will just be because your friends love them. And this way, love generates kind of community whenever it's instantiated and is true. Come to love others for their own sake, to wish their good. And if you love me, I'll expect you to love them as well. And indeed, if you do love me, you will. That's the way, that's the logic of friendship. That's the calculus. And you know this. And this is why we can know this actually good news when Christ tells us that we are friends of God. And this begins to make sense now of the commands of love. To love God above all else and to love your neighbor as yourself. What we're saying is that in becoming children of God, to be made friends of God, we are now moved within ourselves through the gift of charity and indeed obliged by charity, not only to love God, but to love those whom God loves. And guess what? That's everybody and everything in a particular, right? So we would need to make distinctions. Now, the point here is that lying, grievous lying, not all life will be grievous or moral sins in the way I'm going to explain them. But for those that are, what will make them especially grievous, what will make them moral sins, will be that they will be contrary in some way to charity. They will be incompatible with, they will signal some kind of rupture, some kind of turning away from this reality, this friendship with God. So there are some kinds of lies in and out themselves, which are always going to be a kind of mortal sin, always going to be contrary to this friendship, just in virtue of the kinds of lie they are. They cannot be, their gravity cannot be diminished by pointing to some kind of circumstance. These are the lies that have to do with divine truth. Thomas says, I'll quote, "A lie may in itself be contrary to charity by reason of its false signification. For of this, the lie, it's about divine things, it's contrary to the charity of God, whose truth one hides or corrupts by such a lie. So the lie of this kind is opposed not only to the virtue of charity, also to the virtues of faith, religion, it's the virtue by which we show reverence to God as the principle and source of our end of our existence and our moral education. Wherefore, it's the most grievous and mortal sin." The point here is that we look to deny one's friendship with another, to say things that would deny their goodness as you understand it, to turn away from this precious gift is to do something, in this case, say something that is directly contrary to that friendship. And when we speak this way, when we betray our friends, our friends are right to hold us to account. You left me hanging. Why did you say that? Why didn't you come to my defense? Where were you? And so on and so forth. The point here, again, is not to begin giving you a catalog of ways to begin, this kind of interior self-condemning monologue. It's rather to draw attention to how good and true and beautiful friendship with God is. And what I'm trying to do is to underscore the seriousness of this friendship and the obligations of truth-telling in relationship to it. And the best way to see this is Jerry, his friendship with God. God is not your equal. He is your Lord. He's your creator. He is your friend. He wills you good. He wills you a good that is so great that there could never be any good that one could will you greater than this. He wills you nothing less than himself. But he is the Lord of reality. And lies that are contrary to charity in some way or another are all of them indirectly a denial of God's lordship. See, let's pause there. So there's quite a lot to say about this, but what I wanted to do is give you a sense of these various different kinds of lying with respect to truthfulness, and then to say something about what will make some lie more or less grievous. In every case, will have to do with some relation, some way in which the lie is contrary or not for contrary to charity. I'm going to say a couple things, and then I'm going to say something about irony that was especially on my heart and mind as I'm prepared for this weekend. So we've been talking about lies of speech, but there are other kinds of deception that have to do not with speech, but with the general comportment of one's person, the way in which we carry ourselves, the way we express ourselves, the way in which we may pursue certain forms of conduct in order to give others the impression of something that is not in fact the case. So all forms of deception by means of conduct rather than speech will fall under some kind of dissimulation. The most specific, recognizable form of dissimulation is hypocrisy, which comes from the old Greek notion of an actor who would wear a mask. Okay, and does anyone know the name of the mask? How these actors were referred to? Yep. Yeah. Okay. So to put on a persona, a mask is a persona in ancient Greek theater. And I would put on a mask in order to convince you that I'm not Adam Idol, but I'm Agamemnon or someone like this, right? And I carry out a story other than my own story on stage. Well, there are quite a number of conflicts actually in antiquity about the morality of theater as such. We will get into those, but the point here is that what a hypocrite is, what hypocrisy consists in, is in pretending to be someone who you are not. And very, very often, so the New Testament speaks often of hypocrites in terms of those who feign holiness, right? Which is to say, they do things that religious persons do. They participate in the cult, the worship of a deity, but they do this not for its own sake, but in order to give the appearance of holiness. This is a kind of dissimulation. There's also boasting, but I really want to, and then I will give you some time to continue talking, but and asking questions. But what I really want to talk about and flag for you is irony. There is actually some faint but real connection between irony as it pervades our ordinary speech and humor today, and irony as Thomas understands it. You know, it's the idea of never quite saying what one means. Now, I don't mean to say that there are no forms of speech involving hyperbole or other kinds of exaggeration that, you know, are licit. We'd never deny. But there's a kind of irony, kind of denial of the truth about oneself that is typically not as vicious as boasting, which would be the exaggeration of one's qualifications, the exaggeration of one's achievements, or the attribution of one's achievements to merely one's own doing rather than the help of others, not least the help of God. But irony, if it's not as typically or as overtly vicious as boasting, as I just described it, is nevertheless, I think, presents us with some real difficulties. And I think in this cultural moment, something to come to terms with. So irony in this sense is a kind of deception that consists in denying the goods that one has been given from God. It's a capitulation, made circumstances, to falsehoods that are uttered about us and then taken on within us, that begin to frame unduly our understanding of who and what we are. So I'll say to all of you, I'll say first to the young men in the room, the last 8 years of teaching at Yale, I've noticed increasingly when young men come into my office that they are carrying the entire wave of the world on them, because they're being told more ways than one constantly that all the problems in the world, everything wicked, every injustice is their fault. They have nothing to offer. They have nothing to give. That they are they're toxic in their very substance, and that they need retraining. And to believe this about oneself and to conduct oneself as though it were true is a kind of irony opposed to the truth about who and what you are. You are not the source of every species of malevolence that flies. It's not true that you have nothing to offer. It's not true that you ought to remain within your home, playing video games, eating Doritos, and just, you know, waiting for something to happen. And I'll say to all of you, not just the young men, and I'm sure there's some way in which this is also the case with respect to young women, but it's just not something I'm able to see, and you can tell me about it. But what I can say to all of you is the same way that young men are being told that they're the scourge of the earth, it's increasingly the case that young Christians are being told that they have nothing to offer, that all of our problems are our problems, that or your problems, that the issues that we are contending with at a local and global level are due to the hegemony of Christianity. This is not true. It's false. And the truth is that you are children of God, sons and daughters of God. You've been transferred, as St. Paul says, from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light, his beloved son. Truth is that you're born again from above. Truth is that you have awaiting you in heaven a stone with a name written on it, known only by the Lord. That's who you are. And truthfulness, as we ought to understand it, and as I hope you'll begin to think about it, has to do ultimately with the rectification of one's self-perception and therefore self-expression in light of and with respect to the truth of the gospel.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.